Welcome to The Weekly. I'm Jeremy.
I'm Chris.
And this week on The Weekly, The Last Prospector, supplement for Stargrave. D&D Beyond changes hands officially. A new D&D documentary, Role Players, coming.
L-E or L-L?
L-E, yeah. Yes. And a reproductive rights bundle on Drive-Thru. All right. So the first thing, and this sounds really fun, this is actually the second supplement. So Stargrave is kind of the sci-fi counterpart to Frostgrave.
Right.
Same author and same D20 systems, miniature agnostic, you know, very similar. You build a crew instead of a gang and, sci-fi stuff. And but this new supplement sounds really fun. And you really got to give it to McCullough. He's just, ever since like Frostgrave released, he's just been knocking it out of the park
right.
with so many games and systems, and everything that supports it is done really well. And they did a second edition of Frostgrave, and it was compatible, backwards compatible. And just like, you got to respect this guy for doing it exactly how it should be done.
Right.
And I hope other companies are paying attention to both his output and the style where how everything is released. So The Last Prospector is a new campaign supplement for Stargrave that adds a couple of interesting new mechanics. So the basis of it is that your gang is hot on the heels, or I guess your gangs you'll be playing against, are hot on the heels of a prospector who alerted you to a big score. So there are 10 scenarios in this, and it, of course, it includes experience and loot with each scenario.
Cool.
But a couple of the different mechanics that change things up a bit are, there is a component called faction standing.
Oh.
So there are 6 factions in this world, and whoever you make happy, whoever you have a positive, positive standing with, gives your gang bonuses.
Oh, nice.
So you'll get some positive, and I'm not sure if there's multiple, it's probably opposing factions.
Probably.
So you have to kind of choose one or another, but you'll have different kinds of bonuses, and your crew will have different abilities based on who they're favoring. And another thing is, because it's mystery kind of investigation based, the loot and rewards are kind of broken up into information and clues.
Okay.
And that determines, what you come away with from the scenario. And then also, the fun mechanic about that is the scenarios are not in narrative order. Whoever wins the first one, like gets the most clues to the first one, chooses which one is next.
Nice.
So yeah, so depending on who's victorious, they have the most information and they can choose the direction.
That's cool.
That you go. Yeah.
I want to see how that works now. Mm. Because when you said like clues and information, even with Frostgrave and the Frostgrave scenarios, like you didn't find out what your treasure was until you got it off the table and rolled, and that was kind of its fun little mini game on itself, unless you got crap. But I see now how that's already kind of like hidden information,
right?
And there was a little bit of that in some of the Frostgrave
yes.
campaigns, especially I think like the Hunt the Golem one or something. Like there were special tables you rolled on, and some of the things you could only get once, which kind of represented information or clues. But yeah, I like that, and I'm kind of glad to see. Replicated in Stargrave, but the part about whoever has the most information getting to choose the mission that goes next is really cool.
Yeah. Yeah, it's great. I mean, adding new mechanics, you're always like, is this going to throw the balance off of the game? But it sounds like this is great. It just like gets you more involved in a narrative and a storyline within the game. I'm sorry, secrets and information.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, not clues. So that gives you investigation points, and those are what the victory points are in these scenarios. So yeah, it sounds really fun, and it's more kind of sci-fi western themed. So you kind of start out in a saloon, like that's the first scenario, and so it has more of that theme. So the previous supplement, the very first supplement to Stargrave, was called Quarantine.
I want to say 47.
Yeah, something, and that was more of a maybe kind of alien or space Hulk kind of thing, where you're stuck on a ship and investigating a ship, and there are horrible things, zombies.
There always are
horrible things.
I have to wonder, it's a fun trope, right? Zombies in space on a ship or whatever. But you got to wonder, like, hopefully, if we ever get to the point where humanity is actually doing that, they'll just go, no, right. No, don't no, just no.
Yes, yeah. We'll avoid all derelicts from now on. Yeah, quarantine 37, sorry.
Oh, 37.
Yes. Yeah. But yeah, so already there's a couple of supplements to play for the game if you've already made it through all the scenarios included in the core rulebook. So that's great. And if you don't know McCullough's work, please check out Frostgrave, Stargrave, Rangers of Shadowdeep, and Silver Bayonet.
Those and are... Ghost Archipelago.
Oh, yeah, and Ghost Archipelago. Right, right. Yeah. So those are all miniatures, skirmish games that have official miniatures, but you can use anything you want. And they all have different... And Rangers of Shadowdeep is a solo narrative game. I mean, there's just... Yeah, there's so much.
I wonder... Mm-hmm? I've only looked at... Well, Frostgrave extensively. But I wonder how similar mechanics-wise... the games are, because if Rangers of Shadowdeep has a solo mode and a little AI thing, I wonder if you could adapt that to Frostgrave or Stargrave or one of the other ones.
Yeah, there was a tease about a forthcoming solo co-op expansion. So yeah, we may be getting something like that. And I think even in Blaster, McCullough released games like solo games that you could play that they were simplified, but you know, kind of a similar rule set. But it's really fun. I mean, if you enjoy game systems and game design, following his career and following like the evolution of his systems is really fun. You can see his inspirations and also see like logically where he thinks things are lacking or wants to, you know, move into different directions. So it's a lot of fun, and because it's skirmish, it's a reasonable number of minis. And
unless you decide to do, like, I'm going to do multiple factions like that, like my dumb ass does,
Right. So, a really excellent thing. So check that out if you haven't, and we'll put a link to the digital versions of everything below. And that, of course, helps us on the cast because those are affiliate links. So give us a few pennies for our credits. Yeah, for our trouble, our credits on DriveThru. All right. So a big handoff is happening.
Oh, yeah.
Soon, not quite yet, but as of this recording, it's pending. So the official transfer of ownership is happening next week, May the 18th, as D&D Beyond moves into the hands of Wizards of the Coast. So the transfer, so they're notifying people because current users of D&D Beyond, because you will have to, there'll be a few things that you'll have to kind of agree to and change. So there's a new terms of service. So the accounts are going to be moved over to Wizards of the Coast accounts. Extra permissions are going to be made. So their statement was, on May 18th, 2022, or soon after, your D&D Beyond account will transfer to Wizards of the Coast, at which point you're going to have to agree to the Wizards terms of use that will apply to your use of D&D Beyond, and Wizards privacy policy, which will apply to the personal data associated with your account. If you're located in the EU or the UK, then it's then you'll become the data controller of your personal data once it transfers. I guess because the EU has different privacy rules. But the big question, like we've already seen involving fandom, fandom is, what does this mean for user content and homebrew and stuff that people have already been uploaded? Wizards have said they initially said in the kind of FAQ, they officially said permission to put your user content on D&D Beyond and its services. So we're working to increase the permissions of the scope. And so does that mean that Wizards will own your content? Wizards has no intent of taking ownership over user content. If anything you put on D&D Beyond and the terms of service will not grant us these rights. Permissions we will need for user content will relate to allowing us to operate the service, just including display of displaying that content on our site.
Right. Yeah, because if you didn't give them permission to display the content on the site, you wouldn't be able to use anything.
Right. Yeah, so I thought that was good. That was a bit reassuring because the previous owners of D&D Beyond may have made things a little more difficult. And I didn't know that D&D Beyond was actually purchased in that Curse Twitch. So Amazon bought Twitch. Mm-hmm. Twitch bought Curse, or I guess it's still Amazon. And Curse did own fandom and all of that stuff in there. Okay. But then Amazon released it. So it was its own thing. Mm. I'm not sure how many years that has been ever since, I guess, they bought Twitch. But that's interesting that Amazon at one time could have been, you know, controller of this. But they, I think they've only done that. They very rarely have done that. I think Scholastic and this Curse fandom thing were the only things they've ever bought. is a big, you know, part of something and then let go independently. So I guess that's benefited them. But what does this mean, though? I mean, basically now Wizards has a walled garden of D&D.
Right.
And well, yeah.
I was going to say, haven't they kind of always?
Yeah. But still, if you're on Roll20, they're still, you know, in the store and things. If you're browsing D&D, they're still, oh, what's this system or what's this character sheet? You know, there's still like free assets that will lead you to other things. So discovery is going to be, you know, more limited. And as people go to digital only in a walled kind of situation, then they're not going to find out anything unless someone is, you know, telling them or trying to pull them into another system. So organically, there's going to be much less discovery if someone gets into the hobby through 5e and just like stays in that world.
Yeah, it's kind of what people who get into. Anyway, okay. I have never, I don't believe I have ever used D&D Beyond. Mm-hmm. I have very limited experience with like virtual tabletops. I didn't even really know that you could use custom content in D&D Beyond. Mm-hmm. Like I knew D&D Beyond had like their packages and stuff you could buy. I knew Matt Mercer's Blood Hunter custom was up there because Critical Role won't shut the fuck up about it, right? But I thought that was kind of like an edge case where here's something that was made for D&D Beyond and, of course, uploaded to the site so you could buy it. I thought it was largely most like a rules reference kind of thing. So it's nice to hear that you can upload custom content to D&D Beyond. I'm sure it is going to be like a walled garden, but my impression, ill-formed, is that if you were using D&D Beyond, you were probably only purchasing stuff from whatever site D&D Beyond was part of, right?
Right.
So I don't think this is going to make a large number of people jump ship, right? Like if you liked Roll20, you're probably going to use Roll20. If you liked D&D Beyond, you're probably going to continue to use D&D Beyond. And you're only going to probably look for stuff for sale in whatever marketplace or thing D&D Beyond has. So more of a walled garden, I don't think it's going to be that big of a change.
Yeah.
Completely knee-jerk reaction. I don't know.
Yeah, and I hope because this is, you know, Hasbro and Wizards and they have publishing, you know, experience and things, that this means we see codes in books instead of, here's a physical copy, here's a now go buy the digital for the exact same price.
Right, right. That's... I remember on social media, like when this was kind of announced, that was the big thing several people were saying. It'd be kind of like, we'll gladly pay $5 more for like a code in the book so that buying a physical book gets you access to that thing in D&D Beyond instead of having to buy it three fucking times.
Right. So. Yeah. Yeah. So Games Workshop has successfully done that with their codices. They have a nice long code in there that opens it up in their apps. So hopefully that same sort of thing could happen. But at the same time, if it's only the money people looking at this, they're going to say, why would we lose this revenue stream? They have to buy the books. Mm. Somebody has to buy those books. So why are we giving up that, you know, that 200%
markup? Yeah. I don't know. But I mean, you do that. Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, that's what people are kind of already doing. But I guess maybe people could stomach it because it was different companies.
Mm-hmm.
Now that it's the same company, like hopefully the money people would have some kind of calculations they could do. Or like, okay, if we don't do that, we'll lose this many customers. And if we do it, you know, anyway.
Yeah.
No, I think Fandom for Cortex Prime does that because my Cortex Prime book had a big old code.
Oh, nice.
In it.
Oh, okay. So it's, yeah, it was already possible.
Yep.
But maybe with the deal that Fandom had with D&D that wasn't happening. But cool. So related to the speaking of physical books, D&D will be permanently removing two books from its 5e kind of offerings. So the Volo's Guide to Monsters and Mordenkainen's Tome of Foes are gone as of May 17th. That means digitally.
Digitally, okay.
Yeah, because they've been and so that means they're not going to be there's not going to be any further printings. And because they have edited, they've removed alignments, like default alignments and things, edited all of this content, or, you know, a lot of this content, not all the fluff and everything, but into the Monsters of the Multiverse, that new book that was included in the box set.
Okay, so it's not like there's a problem with it. It's Well, we realize a lot of it is duplicated in this other book, and yeah, these are kind of extraneous.
Well, it was edited. Yeah, it was edited. So there was a problem with it because they're trying to get the monster alignment thing under control. So that is what the Monsters of the Multiverse kind of intended to do. So the monsters included in those two books are now going to be combined into that one volume. But those original ones are not going to be available, which means we lose the lore and some of the writing, you know, of those books, and which won't be reproduced. So I guess there's been no word about, I've already seen prices kind of spike a little bit on Amazon, but there's no word on how much, you know, what kind of stock they still have and how much that they're going to sell. But I thought that was interesting. But they did say, though, that if you have purchased these digitally, that they will still be available.
Well,
they won't remove your purchase.
So they're not going to pull like an iTunes or an Apple where they're just kind of like, that thing you bought?
Right.
You don't own it anymore. Yeah.
Yeah. So maybe they'll just remind you or mark it and say, you know, this information has been updated so that, you know, if it's the first time you've seen it, you won't be completely screwed. Right. But this marks the first time that there's been a wholesale delisting from D&D Beyond and their published book. So yeah, that was a funny thing added to the handover that I thought people should know about in case you're a collector, in case you want all of those.
I don't think we have that many D&D watchers. Yeah,
that's right. That's true. We have
which I take full credit for.
There's D&D hate watching. Yeah. Is all there is. Well, speaking of hate watching, ooh, good segue. XTR has announced, XTR is a global documentary studio. Okay. They have announced a new documentary on Dungeons & Dragons. And this kind of like extends the same, I guess, argument as D&D Beyond. Like, they're starting to make this, like, you know, this identity and this lifestyle brand out of D&D. And I think this documentary is going to try to help them as much as possible to do that.
Here's your tagline, D&D. Goop for gamers.
Yeah, goop for gamers. What do those candles smell like?
Exactly. There's already fucking candles, bathrobes, all this. Just go full Gwyneth Paltrow and make goop. Just don't shove those miniatures anywhere.
So a brand new documentary that is going to kind of follow the popularity of the game from its inception all the way to 5th edition, and was kind of filmmakers were inspired by the success of 5th edition and kind of culturally how it's has a bigger presence. So the director of the film is Morgan John Fox and produced by Ted Speaker. And they have already produced a kind of geek documentary called The Hobby about the trading card okay. hobby. Yeah, the TT or CCG kind of.
TTRP. TTCG, you're right, sorry. You're right.
And so they do have experience in this, and their release was currently in production. The documentary comes on the heels of Paramount and E1's announcement of the title of the upcoming narrative piece on the same obsession. So Dungeons & Dragons, Honor Among Thieves was the Paramount movie. They released their title recently. Hasbro has reported explosive growth on the franchise as a result of a major theatrical release in March 2023. And so using never-before-seen archival footage, interviews with high-profile celebrity D&D fanatics, role players, the title, will tell an all-encompassing story of Dungeons & Dragons, from the game's origin story to the cult-like devotion of its players. The documentary will explore the power of living in a fantasy world that you can have on real-life connections. So I guess I'm going to talk about the social aspects of it. But yeah, so they're directly involving Wizards of the Coast, former TSR WotC representatives, celebrity players.
TSR three people?
hopefully Justin Linnessa is involved. Celebrity players, streamers, game experts, journalists, and authors. So they'll talk to a bunch of people. And the thing that makes me kind of gee a little bit is celebrities. So we're going to see Vin Diesel and the typical, like, wow, he plays D&D.
I think we're kind of past that a little bit. Because, yeah, for a while, it felt like, whoa, these celebrities play D&D. And that was kind of the main point. But, like, I think we're kind of past that now. And not that I'm that part of the D&D hobby. But it kind of seems like we've moved on from celebrities being interested in D&D to their being D&D celebrities.
Right. That's a good
I don't think miniature wargaming has passed that, because we're still at the, whoa, Henry Cavill, what of his name? Look at his pen and war. Like, it seems like tabletop wargaming is still at the celebrities do it. It's cool now, kind of.
Right. yeah, that's true. Yeah. So obviously, so this film will be released in 2024, perfectly in time with the 50th anniversary of the game. So yeah, they're kind of cash in on that.
Yeah. It kind of sounds like a wank fest.
Yeah. It very well could be. I don't think. Yeah, they're just going to show those touching stories. Oh, you know, this person was socially awkward and now they're the king of their castle. Yeah. But the director said, as a director, I'm excited to tell the story of D&D, which at heart is about the true power of learning to work as teams, consuming and creating inclusive narratives. And there's nothing more exciting than a legendary game that rose to fame with a little help from the era of Satanic Panic. So, yeah, it should be interesting, yeah.
I'm having a negative reaction here, right?
Yeah.
And my negative reaction is that could be said about any role-playing game.
Mm-hmm.
And D&D is the most popular one, but I kind of have this cringe reaction when I see D&D as being lauded as this massive, like, team-building exercise. And we all learn to come together. And thinking of all the horrible GMs that have, like, broken groups because they have their story they want to tell.
Right.
And, like, horror stories of people playing games getting yelled at because their character didn't do the correct thing.
Mm.
So, I don't know. It's kind of this thing, like, any role-playing game can be a team-building exercise, shared narrative, hippie bullshit, whatever buzzwords you want to throw at it. Any TTRPG can have risen from Satanic Panic thing, right? Mm-hmm. It's just, I think D&D gets this status because it's the most prominent one.
Yeah. It's the Xerox, the Kleenex. Yeah. Yeah, that's true. So we'll see.
No, I have imagined, for the wrong reason, people with a stack of D&D books under their bed, since it's the Kleenex.
Oh, yeah, right. And they just tear pages out
exactly.
As needed.
That was my thought. Sorry. That was that laugh right there.
Oh, man. But we'll see. I mean, it's just going to be part of this whole celebration. I'm sure Wizards is going to push this really hard because it's become such a, you know, it's competitive with Magic as far as the attention and revenue it's generating for them. So we shall see. But I guess this last part, I guess we can start a new new segment called "What's Wrong with America?" But DriveThruRPG has a new bundle called RPGs for Reproductive Justice. So it's 57 games for $25, and actually it's
less than 50 cents a game.
It's growing as well. Yep. Like they said that their people are contributing even more. And so for our foreign listeners, this is going to make very little sense why this is still an issue. So in the wake of the leaked Supreme Court decision, which will invalidate Roe versus Wade, which federally guaranteed access to abortion services.
More importantly,
sorry,
getting political, hinging on just simply the right to privacy.
Oh, right. Yeah, that was the original. Yeah. So that was and without getting crazy political about this, this is just a... The Hydra Cooperative, an indie RPG co-op, is doing this RPGs for Social Justice bundle. And like I said, includes 57. Some of the highlights are Unbound, Starcrossed, Nightmare on the Necropolis Express. And the full list is available. It's a lot. It's a lot of really fun stuff.
Like 57 games.
Yeah.
And growing.
Yeah. And also a recent inclusion was Fate's Accessibility Toolkit from Evil Hat.
Nice.
Was a late joiner. I've heard people talking about this. And they're saying that you can look at the Roe v. Wade decision as the beginning of the culture war in the U.S. Because the government has used this issue. This could have been resolved. Several administrations had complete power to codify this, resolve this issue, and make it just a guaranteed, you know, medical right. They don't even have health insurance, but a right. But instead, it really fires up both bases on both sides.
Sure.
So yep. conservative and liberal. So that was kind of the beginning of,
I don't even think it's want to say liberal anymore.
Yeah, right. Here's a topic, or here's a subject that will get both sides yep. fired up. So there is no benefit in resolving this, because this gets people to vote. Because the thing that you're hearing now is, you're outraged. Isn't this amazing that this is happening? Vote Democrat.
Yeah.
So it's just being used. So it's so frustrating that we do need to have charity bundles, and we do need to be supporting people that are going to lose access to women's health services in this way, because it's so useful that they can't give it up. And it's, you know, kind of the flaw of America's two-party system is, if you have an issue like this, you can't ever resolve it because it's too good for both sides.
Yeah.
Join us in the fight. Keep fighting for it. Yeah. Really?
Aren't you outraged? Don't yes. you wish we would do something about it? $12, please.
Right.
Yeah. No, the personal analogy, because this happened while I was up with the in-laws for Golden Week, and mm-hmm. I promised my kid on the way back, maybe we would stop at the big Daimaru department store, because she's become obsessed with Pokemon now, because the Pokemon Center is there, right?
Yeah, right.
And I kind of realized, I'm kind of using this as a carrot at one point, because the threat of not going to the Pokemon Center, or the reward of possibly going to the Pokemon Center,
right.
could motivate her to do these, like, kind of alter her behavior. Mm-hmm. But then I realized, okay, as soon as I definitely say yes or no, mm-hmm. I don't have that carrot anymore. Like, as soon as the idea of you have misbehaved to the point where we are no longer going,
right.
she has no incentive to behave anymore, right? And as soon as I go, yes, we're definitely going, kind of do whatever's okay. Yeah. And I realized, wow, I get it now. Yes. I get it now.
You have. You've created what, Schrodinger's Pikachu or something?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, so yeah. It lives in both states of existing and non-existent.
Yeah, both in and out of the Pokeball.
Right. Anyway, that's very true. And I think that's maybe hard for people on the outside of the kind of American political system to understand. But it's just the government actively pits people against each other in this way that is so useful for them maintaining their careers, for stimulating voter bases, for donations and everything. It does nothing for people. It serves people, you know, people's health needs and social status and basic welfare in no way whatsoever. And in fact, undermines it in a lot of ways, because there's going to be, you know, if this does happen, there's going to be a lot of people in the rural South that will just lose access, that is going to be a plane ride away, you know, healthcare services that will now be a plane ride away.
Yeah. So. Basically, what this is like, kick it back to the states and say each state gets to decide.
Right.
Right. And one of the other things that people have brought up, it's like, wow, okay, this kind of case was like the linchpin for a lot of other stuff that was privacy, including like same-sex marriages, mm-hmm. interracial marriages, all mm-hmm. that stuff. So as soon as you go, nope, this gets kicked back to the states, to decide on a local level, opens up like a whole bunch of other things that could be like, yep, we'll let the states decide.
Right.
So in the near future, it feels like you could travel like across state lines.
And be married.
And unmarried. Be married or not married. Right. Yeah. Which is, yeah, anyway.
Yeah, no, that's, yeah. It's just insane that they're playing these games, and that they had that kind of fake vote. They rushed a bill and had this. They knew what the
splits
would be. What was going to be, and they're just, it's just this. We got to get everybody to sign.
Performative.
Yeah.
I agree with the outcome. I think I'll disagree with you slightly. Mm-hmm. Saying that government does this kind of makes it seem like they know what they're doing. I think my feeling is like each party in each of the two parties in the U.S. have figured this out and continued to do it rather than this big.
Oh, yeah. Right. Yeah. I don't think it's like the structure of the government. It's the political, and it's the two party system that has like, this works too well. So I think in like a parliamentary, like multiple party system where there has to be like cooperation to get a majority to create a government, this could never happen. But you can take one issue, cut it in half, and say, okay, your shirts, your skins, let's play.
Yeah. Well, it's also like, I'm getting political here. Sorry. It's also like, why nothing ever really seems like it gets done in the states, because at least Democrats, liberal sides, know like, okay, we're going to play, like, this can't get resolved, so let's cooperate and play along, right? And just like, nobody, no. And sorry, yeah.
Yeah.
I'm just going to.
But yeah,
explode.
Yeah, it's frustrating. But at least you can get some cheap RPGs and support a charity that's supporting women.
More important than the cheap games is
supporting
the place your donation goes. Probably.
Right. Yeah. So if you are in a state that is in danger of losing that access, please consider donating, or at least finding a way to help that not be a thing, or get politically active in your state and put pressure on your local politicians to actually
listen to you. Which is not what they can do
anyway. Right.
Anyway, back to the bundle, like you said before, mm-hmm. with other itch bundles, the good thing is
drive-through.
I'm sorry, it's drive-through. I thought maybe I'm thinking of another one.
There may have been.
Cool. Yeah. If there is an itch one, then the benefit of itch is you can pick and choose what you download. You don't just dumped everything.
That's a fair warning to people. Yeah, so bundles on drive-through.
It's a massive zip file?
Yeah. Well, and you get, everything gets loaded into your library, and those creators now have access to your email and may spam you because you are now a customer.
I think you have to spend a couple promotion points.
Oh,
because as someone with a few titles on drive-through RPG, you earn this currency called promotion points, which you can also buy. I believe sending emails directly to people costs you a certain number of those promotion points.
Uh-huh.
It does. Big publishers are going to have millions of them. But that is a good point. You do get put on a list, and people are able to contact you directly. Right. Through that thing,
So that's something I noticed that's very different from itch. So itch, you have a lot more flexibility and a lot more control. And drive through, I'm like, when did I buy something from these guys?
Yeah. Oh, I didn't.
Yeah.
Oh, bundle. Right. Yeah.
It was in the bundle. So I'll put a link to that, and keep an eye out for other, because I'm sure itch, is probably doing the same sort of thing. Keep an eye out for other things, and anybody outside the United States, just look and wonder at how a country could be so confused about a very basic need.
Except they're not. It's all about the money and power. Yeah.
Anyway. Yes. So I should have ended on something different. I should have put these in a different
positive note. How about this?
Yes.
Sludgehead's finally arrived.
Oh yes, that's right.
Finally.
So and looking good too. I like the variety.
That's
kind of
a weird. This is the first time I work with resin.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of weird. I don't know if it's resin because these six heads, you get six heads to a sprue. The sprue is kind of flexible.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Like, everything's still kind of flexible, and the material is fairly, not like super soft, but it's definitely softer than the hard plastic stuff that I'm used to working with.
Mm-hmm,
it's snipping off real easily, and it's cleaning up real nicely, but I was kind of surprised that's got some give and flex.
Oh, I went to it.
It's resin pour, not 3D printed, so.
Oh, okay. Yeah, interesting. I wonder. Yeah, so just be careful airborne, like getting anything airborne when you're taking off.
Oh, I'm not doing anything that tight. Because that's the resin I'm used to. This feels so much, much softer.
I wonder, because with that new, that thermoplastic resin that the Cronopia and then now Warzone will be made out of is a resin that can actually remelt down, but it is a little bit more flexible. It has some flex to it.
Maybe this is something similar.
Yeah,
but anyway, the detail on these heads is super crisp and amazing.
And that's nice.
Perfectly scaled for the Perry miniatures, so nothing looks big and weird, because that's what they were designed for.
Right.
Still disappointed it took as long as it did to get here.
Yeah, but I guess that's with the situation we're in, a smaller companies are at the...
Yeah.
Yeah. Their manpower plus the wonderful... shipping situation.
Yeah.
So things are delayed to the Japanese archipelago.
Yeah, I've been spamming all my social media feeds with pictures of that.
Oh, nice.
So if you want to see that, just go to my social media feeds.
Yeah. Yes. So of course, there's links to that, so you can check out everything Chris is doing with with sludge. And we're gonna have to play some sludge here once we
finally
get.
I don't think I have enough bases.
Oh no!
I ordered a crap ton of bases, but we're between all the 40mm round line infantry, and I'm like, this action is gonna be mostly cavalry, which is also 40mm. I'm like, I think I gotta order 40mm bases. Yeah. But hopefully.
Nice.
Soon ish.
Yes.
Sometime. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Even if it's just bare plastic.
Right. Nice. Yeah. Now that there's new supplements for Stargrave, we got to get through some Frostgrave and then over to Stargrave.
Yeah. Or simultaneous.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. We could. We could alternate. Yeah. That might be fun too.
Yeah.
Let's do that. Kind of compare. Great. And I did a. An interview over
Ooh, nice.
The weekend with the creator of Cthulhu. So we talked about that on the last cast. So Mikael Bergstrom was kind enough to give me some time to discuss kind of the origins of things, how it came. And the interesting story is how it came to Japan. I thought that was really fun.
Ooh, nice.
There was a Japanese streamer that was just like, let's look at untranslated Swedish RPGs on their live stream. And that got attention and got him the publishing deal. But I think you'll also really enjoy his approach what he didn't like about Call of Cthulhu and, you know, what is important in role-playing games and kind of the role of the GM and those sorts of things. I think you'll really enjoy his perspective. I think he's, and he's been doing rule sets and releases for about 12 years.
Wow.
So this is not, I had no idea of his history. And he's like, this is probably my 12th release. I'm like, whoa. So he's has a lot of experience and you can really see.
A release a year. I respect that.
Yes. In the GM sections, he always wants to put, like, that's the beefiest part of a release and has a lot of instruction, because we were talking about how there's so little of that, or things are just like, here's an example of play,
right.
Or and there's not really like, this is what you consider, or he even talks about doing flowcharts and mapping how stories progress, and this will get them here, but there's multiple paths to that.
Nice.
To not make it such a linear slog. So really great. So that should be up soon. I'm about halfway through editing that. So that'll be up over the weekend. So definitely take a look at that. That was a really fun discussion. And thanks again, Mikhail, for your time. And hopefully we'll see an English version of that sometime in the future. And there are his other works are available.
Cool.
At least the one of the more recent ones is available on DriveThru. So links to all of that will go on that video. So that's it for this week.
That's it.
So where can people find you?
On Twitter, as always, and Instagram too, I suppose. It's Hivemind, HYVEMYND, which, as I said, is being spammed with sludge and alternatively Turnip28 stuff.
Nice.
So excellent. How about you?
And I'm still doing my single panel gag cartoon. I missed last week because of the Golden Week kind of chaos, but I'm back to it. Yeah, back on it last Monday. So that's Monday evening, North American time, kind of Tuesday afternoon Pacific time, and I draw my single panel gag cartoon, Domestic Abuse. You can see the back catalog of that cartoon for 20 years, thousands of cartoons on Go Comics, so gocomics.com/domestic abuse, and abuse cartoons on all social media. The live stream of drawing that cartoon happens on both YouTube and Twitch, and I think you can even find it on Facebook as well.
Ooh.
And so join me for cartoons and chatting and Japanese snacks.
Yeah.
I always eat something from a convenience store just to show you something strange. All the things that we have for sale here. But that's it for this week. If you'd like to support what we're doing, please consider becoming a patron. So patreon.com/upturntable and be a weakling. A weakling is a pledge level that directly tells us you want to support what we're doing here on our weekly show. And there's many other levels, including the lore based or just a very minimal, like, good job guys in everything we do. Upturntable.com is the website where you can find everything we're working on, and as well as downloads and things for stuff that we've done in the past. And take a look and see what's there. We'll be back again next week doing this same thing. So we'll see you then.
Later, mortals.
Goodbye.